Steve, make sure that the tape is going to pick up my voice and your voice.
Okay.
Could you tell me what your name is?
Marjorie Ann Beitzel-Chittle.
Okay, let's stop and see if it picked it up.
Cookie.
My name's Isabel Tuning. Today is September the 5th, 2007, and I'm in the home of Mrs. Marjorie Chittum in Stewart's Draft, Virginia, and we're going to... Fishersville. She says Fishersville. And we're going to do an interview for the Brownsburg Museum. Mrs. Chittum grew up in Brownsburg, and so I'm going to ask her if she could share some of her stories with us. But first, I'll ask her for a little bit of background. Could you tell me what your whole name is?
Marjorie Ann Beitzel Chittum.
And did you grow up in Brownsburg, Mrs. Chittum?
I did. I did grow up there and lived there until I was 18.
And when were you born? Do you mind telling me when you were born?
No, I don't mind at all when I tell you. I was born March 15, 1929.
Great. And so you stayed in Brownsburg till you were 18?
I was 18. Mm-hmm.
And you were you born in Brownsburg, or were you born at home?
I was born in the house that my brother, John Layton Whitefield, lives in right now. I was born in that house.
You were born at home.
Mm-hmm.
And how about your brothers and sisters? How many brothers and sisters did you have?
I have one brother, John Layton, and I have no sisters. I always wanted a sister, but I never got a sister.
And how about your parents? Were they from Brownsburg as well?
My mother was from Brownsburg. She was Margaret Dudley, and her parents lived there, Mr. and Ms. Lucian Dudley. My grandmother's name was Martha. And they lived just three houses above us, right there on the main street of Brownsburg. My father's home was over in, it's called Decatur or Aqua, some people call it. And that's where he was from.
And so your mother's family grew up in the log, is that the log house?
That's the log house. That's where my mother's parents lived.
Mm-hmm. And they were Dudleys.
Dudleys.
How did your father get to Brownsburg? Did he move to Brownsburg after he married your mother?
Yes, he did. He was an undertaker, and his grandfather, Miley, was a well-known undertaker in Decatur. And my father's father died when my father was about 6 months old, I think. And so his mother, who was Annie Miley, who I'm named for, came back to home to live and brought my father. And he grew up there. And then he met my mother. I'm not sure where he met her, but my father was 17 years older than my mother. And he met her and when he was at Stanton working for an undertaking company, and then when they got married, they stayed in Stanton a while, and then he was building this house, and the undertaking business was joined to the house.
And in Brownsburg?
In Brownsburg.
Mm-hmm.
And so he married my, that's how they got to Brownsburg, and he opened up a funeral home in Brownsburg and ran it until he died, a very young age. 52.
Oh my goodness, he was young. Oh my. How old were you when he died?
I was 11.
Oh my goodness.
I had just turned 11 in March, and he died in April. Very suddenly. Was back in those days, if you got anything very serious, there was nothing to do, and he had bleeding ulcers, and they couldn't stop the bleeding.
Oh my goodness. Oh, and you were only 11.
And my brother was a senior. It was in 1940.
Mm-hmm. And then did your brother take over the business?
Well, no. My mother kept the business. Mother had her funeral director's license, and she kept the business for a while, and an undertaker in Lexington would come out and do the embalming. And then she did that for a while, and my brother thought he was going into it, and he did try really hard, and he did the apprenticeship over in Charlottesville, but he just said, I'm just not cut out to be mm-hmm. an undertaker. He liked part of it. He liked the funeral directing part, but he didn't like the embalming. He just said, I can't do it. I just can't do it. Mother was disappointed because my grandfather, great-grandfather, had handed the business end of it, you know, down to my father, and I know my father would probably want him to, but he wouldn't want him to if he didn't want to do that. So, but, and my father ran a store there also in the undertaking business. And my brother then ran the store, and he was postmaster there for a good many years till he retired.
So do you remember the store and the undertaking business?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, I do. Yes. My father closed the store, I'm not sure, but sometime before he died, he closed the store. But yes, I remember well the undertaking. In fact, a lot of children, and I had a lot of little friends at school, and they'd want to come to spend the night. And I used to get so upset because I really wouldn't know until the last minute if they were going to come, because the day they would have come, they'd say, your daddy doesn't have a body there, does he? And they were afraid. And so I always just, it really didn't mean that. The only thing it meant to me at that time of my life was it was the way we made a living. And it, you know, I was just used to it. And of course, before daddy put the funeral home into the part that was adjoined to the house where he had the store, when he would get them ready for the family to come in, he put them over in the living room. And mother would lock the door, front door. And of course, you know, nobody locked doors back in those days, even at night a lot of times. And mother would lock the door so we wouldn't come bringing people through there. And as soon as we get home from school, I'd pop through that door, mother. And so this day she forgot to lock the door. And when I popped the door open, and mother, yeah, there it was. But of course I wasn't afraid because I was used to it. And it really wasn't until my father died that I realized what death really was, that it was the end. Because I was just at that very impressionable age. When you lose somebody, it's gone. And we were very close, my father and I were very close. We fished together, and my brother was close to him too, but there were about 6 years difference in our ages, and daddy wasn't a little girl, so you know, that's the way it was.
That must have been an interesting childhood. Were there a lot of funerals in Brownsville?
Yes, and there was a funeral home in Craigsville, and there was one in Middleville, but you know, that was a different area. So daddy got the ones up in that area.
Was there one in Lexington?
Oh yes, there was Harrison's was there, and there was one there called Larner and Pohl. They ran a furniture store and a funeral. And then there was one, I can't think of that, the man who ran it was, I think, maybe a cousin of daddy's, because his name was Sam Miley, and my grandmother was a Miley. You know. So there were actually three funerals there at that time.
But your dad probably got most of the Brownsburg Fairfield raking.
Right, and Montebella, and over in that area, yes.
And did he do blacks as well as the white?
Oh yeah,
everybody.
Mm-hmm, everybody. Yes. Mm-hmm. Lots of black people that live there in Brownsburg and around Brownsburg and over Fairfield.
Mm-hmm.
They know different.
Right. Yeah. Right. What's the first thing you remember about being in Brownsburg?
You know, I was thinking about that, and I can't really pinpoint any one thing. It was just like, it was always there, and I was always there. It was just no no big event when I saw, nothing like it was when I found out about Santa Claus. You know. traumatic.
How did you find that out?
At school.
Somebody told.
Somebody told.
Yeah. You'd been protected up until then.
Until then, yeah. And back then, you didn't learn things like you do now.
How about school? You started first grade in Brownsburg?
Yes, I did, and I loved school. I was...
Which building were you in?
I was in the red brick one that was the first one that was torn down years ago. It was torn down. It was sort of the side of the stucco building. It was sort of the side of it. Actually, it was the side of that. And my room was at the very back of the hall, and Miss Whipple was Molly Sue Hull then, and she was our teacher. She was just out of college. And then you didn't have to go 4 years. You could get teaching certificates. So she just had gotten the teaching certificate. And then she went back in later years and got her degree, but then she, and so I teased her after I grew up. I said, if I had known you were that young, I wouldn't have listened to you.
She was my second grade teacher.
Really?
She was just about my favorite teacher.
Oh, she was my, I have her picture right on my refrigerator right now. She actually is the reason I became a first grade teacher. I just love her to death. And then I took piano lessons from her. And when she played at our wedding.
She played at my wedding. So where did you take piano lessons?
We had a piano at home, but she was living then where, I guess, does Mr. Barnes lives in that house that was beside of the street?
Next to the bank?
Yes, that's where you... Okay, she was living there at that time. And that's where I went to her house to take the piano.
So she had a piano there? She had brought a piano with her?
She had a piano there. And I guess I must have been about in the third grade then, I guess. When that happened. Yeah, about in the third grade.
How many years did you take piano?
Well, let me see, I don't know exactly how many years, but I took from her, and then it seems she quit giving lessons there for a while, maybe when Freddie was bitter, and there was another lady, Catherine Earhart, who went to New Providence Church, and she said that if we would let her use our piano, she would give me my lessons free.
Oh.
So that's what we did until I got tired of taking lessons. And then I think, now that is one thing, it's sort of unclear. I think I went back then and took some more from Miss Whipple, some more piano lessons.
Do you still play?
I don't. My husband, when we were first married, a couple of years after we were married, he gave me a Wurlitzer piano for Christmas, and I had no idea he was going to do it. We were living the same. And then when we moved up on Selma, we moved the piano up there, and then when we moved down here, we really didn't have anywhere for it. By that time, we had started collecting all this junk, antiques, and it was out of tune, and so my grandchildren wanted it, and I said, okay, you can have it, take it. So they took it.
Well, that's good, you found a good home.
Yeah,
for it.
Found a good home. But,
do you remember who your neighbors were in Brownsburg?
Oh, yes, I did, huh? We had on the one side where my brother has his parking lot. Now, when he had the store, he made that a parking lot. There was a black couple lived there.
Oh, so there was a house there?
It was a house there.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember that.
No, yeah, that was way before. And it was Uncle Letcher and Aunt Laura Pleasant. And Uncle Letcher worked for, out at the Strain place, where that is, okay? I don't, the only thing I remember is that, I don't know why he'd take the cows out there and twice a day, and in the wintertime, when he would walk out there with them, he'd wrap his shoes up with burlap sacks and tie sacks, because his feet wouldn't get cold. He wrapped his shoes there and walked out there with those cows. And they had a swing on that porch, a little swing, and then in the summertime they put a vine and it would grow up so you couldn't see anything to keep the sun out. And out beyond your place, I guess that was, Aunt Laura was Uncle Letcher's second wife. And his daughter, I think that was his daughter, was Maggie Pleasant. And Dude Halliburton. Right. Okay.
Dude worked with my granddad.
Okay, they came every evening after supper and to visit. And
did they walk?
No, they had a little, not a Model T, it was a Model A. And I can remember we'd be out or sitting on the porch and we'd see them coming, and one, a mother or daddy or whoever happened to be out there, and say, there comes Maggie and Dude. And I used to love to go over there and sit on the porch and talk to them, because they could tell the most fantastic tales, stories, and I loved it.
Do you remember some of the stories?
I don't. They always had so... It just about their olden days, you know. And Aunt Laura would lean on the fence and she'd see me out. Now this is after my daddy closed the store, and she would say, would you go to the down to Huffman's store for me? And I of course went, and she'd have a little bag of eggs for me to take to help to pay, and she said, and you can have two of the eggs for take it for me.
Oh, nice.
So then my mother found out that she was doing that, and mother said, don't you take those eggs from that heart. Said, she just does that. You just tell her you'd be glad to do it anyway. So that was the end of me taking the eggs.
I have good memories of Maggie and Dude.
Oh, yes. I love Maggie. Well, we'd sit on that porch and just talk about all kinds of things going on in Brownsburg and what I was doing at school and everything. And I used to go to... And my brother did too, and all, well, everybody who lived there would go to when the school, the black school, which has been torn down, you know where that was down on,
right?
Okay, and they had their school closings up at the church. Well, all of us went. We went and enjoyed it. Miss Carrie Peters always had a nice, I can see her now, that nice white dress on, introducing all those people. Ruth and Frances Craney, I grew up playing with them. Ruth and Frances.
Oh,
Frances,
and she was
Porterfield.
Frances Porterfield.
And their mother was Aggie and Glasgow. And their grandfather lived there with them, and his name is Uncle Sam. But I used to, I played up there a lot.
In which house did they live in?
They live where the Porterfield boy lives now, where Frances lived. They've done, of course it didn't look like that. It was logged like my grandmother's was.
Oh,
it was that old feather board.
Now, are you talking about the house next to your grandmother's house, or the house up next to the church?
No, next to my grandmother's house.
On Main Street.
As you go down that alley,
right on that corner,
where the Porterfield,
right.
Frances' grandson is there now.
Charles's.
I think it was Charles Jr.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's... And who lived on the other side of your house?
The first people who lived there was Miss Hassie Dice lived there. She was a widow, and then she married a man. His name was Bolin. And she had... Her children were all grown. She lived there, but then Lou Stewart lived, their family lived there. When I first knew Lou, they lived down beside of where Leopold lives in the house.
Mm-hmm.
Then they moved from there up as you go around that turn, that house has been torn down also, beside of Will Gilmer's house. You know where Will Gilmer's, that house in Brownsburg up there, but right as you make the turn to go around out of Brownsburg, the blacksmith shop is on one side, and the Will Gilmer house is across the street. Nobody lives in it.
Is it the one that has sort of a balcony?
Yes, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
And Lou and her family lived in the house beside of that, and that house has been torn down and something else good there. And then Lou's family moved down beside of me, and that's when we really got close then. I could lie in my bedroom and talk to them in their bedroom across the field when we weren't together. I mean, I spent many, many nights there, and they likewise. And then I ate over there, and I mean, we did everything together. And then they moved up where Doris Lunsford lives.
And
that's where they...
You and Lou are the same age?
A lot of people thought that was so odd because Frances and I were the same age. We called her Jude. They started out, Carl, her brother, and my brother, John Layton. She was so little, and I don't know how they picked it up, but they started calling her Pajulius. Then it got down to Jewel. Then many years before she died, it got down to Jude, and everybody called her Jude. And she and I were the same age, 2 months different. Lou is the age of my husband. She's a couple of years older. I don't think she'd mind me telling you. If she does, it'll be okay.
Oh, no, she told me.
Yeah.
She told me.
She doesn't care. I was just kidding. But she and I were closer together for most of the time because Jude was a different personality. She was so tiny. She liked to play ball, but she was afraid, and every time the ball would come to her, she'd make this little squeal and jump back. And she liked to read, and Lou and I were just, Jude always said we were just too roughnecks for her. Too roughnecks for her.
You were more adventurous.
More adventurous. I love Jude to death, and I still miss her. But I tried to be faithful, keep going to see her when she was sick and everything. But Lou and I, and Earl and Boyd, we were just really close. Wherever you saw Lou and Jude, and then to me, we usually were together, either two of us or three of us. And kids wouldn't do that now, but we were great big kids, and Mr. Wiseman drove the school bus, and he parked it right in front of the house while they lived there beside me. And on Sunday afternoon, we did the same thing every Sunday afternoon. We played paper dolls in the bus. I mean, we were great big girls when we were doing that.
She talked about paper dolls.
Yeah, we used pattern books. Mm-hmm. Our mother would come to town, and we'd always say, go into Penny's, and Leggett's have patterns then. And we'd say, ask them if they have any old pattern books. So she would, and then we would cut the head off of a girl, a child or whatever, and we'd leave a little, like a little prong, a little stick paper on there that you could lick it and wet it. We cut the dresses out, and then you could stick that head on all kinds of dresses. And we used a catalog to keep them in, and you had a catalog, and you had the mother and the father and the little boy and the little girl, and you had it different places, and we put little flaps on there to tell you what, and we had names for all of them. And when the little neck would get so it wouldn't stick anymore, we'd have to get a new one. But I remember Lou's doll, her main doll was named Mary Jo, that girl, the teenage girl, the girl, big girl. I think Lou's named her girl Mary Jo.
What was yours?
My name was Ruth.
Ruth.
Mm-hmm. But we That was, it was sort of like Ken and Barbie are right. now, you know, except mm-hmm. ours were, their ours were homemade. We didn't have bottles. They lived there, then they moved up in front of us. And then Lou and Boyd and Earl and I were there because we traveled together. We camped together all during our kids growing up. We had trailers. There were three or four couples, Carl and his family, and Lou and Boyd and us, and Fritz and Paul and his family. And we'd park the trailer. We'd go different campground. We went to Desert a lot. And we parked the trailers, because back then you didn't really have spaces where you had to be. You know, and we sort of parked the trailers and make a little circle so we had the middle there. We could sort of have our own little courtyard.
So did your husband go to Brownsburg School? Did you?
No, he went to Spotswood. He went to Spotswood.
And how did you meet him?
Well, of course it was during the war. And our basketball coach had gotten where he was a WNL fellow. I think that's what it was. But you know Ms. Griever?
No, I don't.
She was Angie Margaret Wade. Angie Margaret Griever.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, she was our basketball coach, and her husband was in service, and so she was just sort of there, I think, filling in. And because the other one had to go, and her husband was coming home from service, and they had to have a basketball coach. And Earl was out of high school then and working at DuPont. But when he was in high school, I don't admit it to him, but I'm told he was an excellent basketball player. So somehow, somebody recommended him that he might be able to work at DuPont and coach our team, girls' team. So they contacted him. And so he said yes, he would come and talk to him. So he came over and to be interviewed. Well, back then, you had to... The bells weren't like they were now. They're automatic. You had to have somebody to go in and ring them. And usually it would be a senior. So I had been assigned to that job of going, taking care of watching the time and going and ringing the bells. So when I went in to ring the bell, I knew who he was because we were in competition with ball. You know. And he was sitting in there, and I just went in to ring the bells, and that is it. And then so my friend, who you may know, Betty Fireball, Betty Palmer, Don Fireball's wife.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Betty lived just sort of diagonally across from Earl. So that evening, I didn't know any of this until she came and told me a couple of days later at school. He told her that day that the girl that came in to ring that bell, that he's going to marry that girl.
Oh my goodness.
And she, of course, just joking. I'm sure he was joking. But he said, but I got to get a date with her first, because he knew we were good friends. And so he said, will you get me a date with her? And because he said, I know she won't go if I ask her. So Betty came to school and asked me if I would go. And I was living with John Lake. Mother had gone away to work in Lynchburg. And so I lived my senior year and maybe half of my junior year with John Lake in Virginia. And so she said, will you go? Earl wants to know if you go to a movie or somewhere. I don't know where it was. And I said, absolutely not. I will not. He said, he thinks he is such a good basketball player. I knew he was. So she went back and told him, and then she came back the next day and I asked him again. And I said, okay. He had a brother, and she said, maybe if, and he's dead now. She said, maybe if you go with him, maybe his brother will ask me to go. I said, okay, I will go that this one time just to see it, but I'm not going anymore. It's just one time I'm going. So the rest is history.
And did Betty get a date with this
person? No, he didn't. He didn't go. But I wouldn't take anything from my memories of Brown
School. Tell me a little more about what you remember about school. Who was your second grade teacher?
Isabel Rubush. She was a little short.
I haven't heard that name.
Okay, I don't think she was there but a couple years, and she lived with Helen Watson, Helen Carson, who was on that teacher, and they lived right there on the corner where Joe Heath lives.
Can you spell her last name?
Rubush?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure whether it's R-E-U-B-U-S-H, because some people do, or if it's R-U-E-B-U-S-H.
Mm-hmm.
She was from, I think Isabel was from maybe Buena Vista. I believe somewhere like that.
So she boarded down there? With
no, she and Helen lived there. And part, you know, they lived, I think, downstairs. That was what they did. She was a little short, wore hair up, you know, kind of like, she wasn't a young person. She wasn't a young person. And she, second grade, that's when they were, the red building was still there. But our second grade was upstairs. It was an auditorium up there, and Ms. Trimmer's office was up there. And they just petitioned off a part of that and made it our second grade. And that's when Betty came on the picture. Betty Fireball, Betty Palmer. That's when she started coming to Brownsburg School. She didn't come in first grade.
She lived in Spotswood?
She lived in Racine.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. And Racine had a little school there for a while, I think. She came in second grade there. There was another little girl and she's still a really dear friend of mine, too. And she lived in the house just before you get to the Hessler place, that house right there on the left, just before you turn up in that lane. The Huffmans lived there. Her name was, in fact, I talked to her on the phone last night, and I teased her because everybody calls her Claire, but all during school we called her Claire Alice. So whenever I call her, I say, Claire Alice? And she knows who it is. But she was a good friend of mine, and we were talking about it last night on the phone. I used to come in the house, and I'd say, Mother, I'm going to walk to Claire Alice's. And I felt Mother wasn't afraid, you know, there was nothing to be afraid of. And that's, I expect it's a mile. And I used to spend a lot of nights up there, and she spent nights with me. And we had a good time. But then in third grade, Miss Elizabeth Williams taught me. She lived around with Mr. Walter Dice in that house. Mr. Dice was married to her sister. And when Miss Dice died, Miss Williams moved around there. And, you know, that was would have been a no-no.
Oh.
So they had a high school girl. I'd love to know where that girl is. She was from Fairfield. Her name was Sally, but I can't think of what her last name was. But Sally lived there with them just to keep...
As a chaperone.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And which house was Mr. Dice's house?
That's where this Swope boy lives. No, his name's not Swope. Driver.
Bob Driver.
In the Bob Driver house.
Mm-hmm.
And then the fourth grade is when I lost my dad in fourth grade.
And was he sick or did he just
he
die
had been,
suddenly?
Yeah, he had not been well for a long time. He had to, you know, diet, watch his what he ate and all
mm-hmm.
this stuff. But the ulcers just...
Was he able to work?
Oh yeah, he worked. Mm-hmm. He worked. And the night he died, he got sick, Miss Trimmer, your daddy will remember, Miss Trimmer put on beautiful apparatus and glee club things and all that. And John Layton always had a solo part and sang. And he was to sing to a girl that was from Rockbridge Bass. Her name was Mary Barton. And he was singing Beautiful Dreamer to her. It was a Stephen Foster operetta. And he said, I so believe I can do it. I just don't believe I can do it. And Daddy said, you go and do what you have to do now. I'll be okay. So he did. He went on. He got sick on the 4th, died on the 7th, and was buried on the 9th.
What month was it?
April. And he just turned, was just shy of 53.
Did he die at home, or did he go
no,
to the
hospital?
No, they
took him to the hospital, and they sent me to Grandma's.
Up the street in Brownsville. Mm-hmm,
and they took it from me. But I think he knew, because Mother said when they came down the steps, he said, I'll never come down these steps again. It was terrible. I'll never forget that.
Well, I'm sure you would, to be 11 years old.
11 years old.
Oh.
Yeah. It's going to be a long time. I'm going to be 40.
And did your mother remarry?
Yes, she did. She married Hugh McNutt. And see, Hugh, then actually I think Mother was married to Hugh longer than she was to Daddy, because they got married, they got married in 1921, I believe. John was born in 21, and Daddy died in 1940, so they were only married by 20 years. And I think she was married to Hugh longer than that.
And did she move out to his house, or?
No. When they got married, he was working with a company construction. They moved around, and they lived in Clifton Forge for a while, just a short while. Then they came back, he got back to Stanton, and they bought a house at Stanton.
How old were you when she got married?
Oh, I was married. I was married.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Doug wasn't born when she got married.
Well, so she ran the funeral home for a while, mm-hmm. And then you said she went to Lynchburg?
Yeah, she went to Lynchburg. I was supposed to go to Madison College, and I couldn't decide what I wanted to do, and so Mother wanted me to go to Madison, and so I said, because I wanted to be a teacher, but by that time, Earl was in the picture, and so he was 2 years older than I am. And so the more I thought about it, I don't know. I guess I was just unsettled, and that just seemed like a good thing to do. That, you know, I think it was because I had lost Daddy so young, and then I'd lived with Johnny and Virginia, and they were good as gold to me. Couldn't anybody been any better to me, even though I had knew that I had to get his permission for everything. I didn't mind that at all. But I guess I always wanted to be around older people. I liked to be around old people. I always liked to be cooking and doing those kind of things. So I decided, I said, I don't want to go to Madison. I said, why can't, and Lou had gone to Lynchburg. She got married 2 months before I did, and she had gone to Lynchburg to Virginia Commercial College. I said, why can't I go over there where Lou went? And Mother said, well, I thought you wanted to be a teacher. And I said, well, I do, but I don't want to go that long. So, and I was afraid to tell Mother that, you know, well, when we get married. So I did go to Lynchburg, and I did get in Virginia Commercial. And Lou was cut out to be a secretary. I cut out to be a teacher. I hated it. I couldn't do the shorthand. I never did learn to do the bookkeeping. And so I stayed, and every night mother got me a room at the Y, and she got a job at the hospital over there in the diet care part of it. And every night I cried. Couldn't do it. And finally one day I just can't take it anymore. I'm just gonna take it. And I just went in there. Didn't even tell mother that I was in there and told these people I was quitting. I thought it was easier to tell mother if I told them I'd already quit. So she said, well, you have to do something. You've got to prepare yourself to do something. Well, I had met this girl. I lived at the Y, right by the CA. And I had met this girl that said she was in beauty school over there. There was a beauty school over there. So she said, why don't you go to beauty school? That only takes 3 months. I thought, boy, that sounds great. So I told mother, I said, I think I want to be a beauty operator. She said, I don't care what you, I don't know, whatever you want, but you're going to do something. So I went down and signed up. She went with me, paid tuition. I went to beauty school. I hated that too. I didn't even work a day. I finished, but I didn't work a day. And so I said, Mother, Earl wants to get married. And so he's got a good job. And I said, at that time I was working at Adair Hutton, that's somewhere. I said, Mr. Thorpe said he'd give me a job. I'm going to go to work up there. And maybe I will go to college sometime. She said, no, you won't either. I said, yes, I will. I will go. And she just kept on. I would not. She said, your life, you just ruin it. Your life not getting any education. No. So we got married in December and moved to Stanton. We moved to Racine, lived there a little while, and moved to Stanton. And one day, I don't know, Tammy was already 2 or 3 years
That's
old.
Your daughter.
Mm-hmm. She's 49. And I was just sitting there one day, and I thought, you know what? I believe I'll go down there balling and see if I can get in college. So Earl came in and I told him, he said, well, whatever you want to do. I said, I promised mother I'd finish, and I'm going to do it. So I went down there and talked to Miss Grafton, and she suggested I start out with just a couple courses. I said, no, I want to take them all. She said, you have been out of school 16 years. You cannot do that. It's too hard. You came from a very small school a long time ago. And I said, okay, whatever you say, then. So she said, I think you better just start out pretty slow. So we did. And I did. I finished. And I taught 25 years.
That's a great
story. So when
story.
We walked in, when we got that diploma and walked down there, there was that mother right on the end that aisle. I just think that's funny.
She
told you I'd get it.
She must have been proud.
She didn't even tell me. She said later, she said, I knew when I told you you wouldn't do it, I knew you would because you've always been so determined. Of course, I'm glad I did. And I wanted to teach first grade, and that's what I taught.
Well, she must have been determined, too, to be able to hold the business together for a while and raise two kids.
She was very. Mm-hmm.
That had to be hard for her.
Yeah, because she was raised, my grandparents were very poor. Very good people. Good people. Well thought of in Brownsburg, but they were poor. And so mother said many times she kept Grandma washed on the board till her fingers bled. Because Grandma kept them washing.
And did they go to New Providence?
No, they didn't. Grandma and Granddaddy Dudley never went to church.
Did you go to New Providence
growing up? I went when I was baptized in New Providence and got married in New Providence. Went to Bible school in New Providence. Mm-hmm. In fact, just not long ago, I found my Sunday school little things they give you when you're promoted, and Earl took them down and had them laminated. From the beginner's department to the primary department.
Oh, that's nice that you have
and
that.
And you knew Sarah Bell with Fitzwater?
Mm-hmm.
She was in my class. And I loved Sarah Bell. And she had a little mesh pocketbook. And she carried a little beaded one. And I can see it now, a little fringe on it. And I loved that pocketbook. I wanted one to see that, and Mother never would get me one. And, but Sarah Bell would let me hold hers while I was at Sunday school. And when Sunday school was over, I came back to her. Mother did later get me one, but I wanted one right then while Sarah Bell had hers. I thought about that when I went to her funeral.
Pocketbook.
And my little great granddaughter says it's a purse. They're not called pocketbooks. They got me, they're not called pocketbooks, they're purses.
And you mentioned Miss Trimmer. Everybody has pretty strong memories of Miss Trimmer.
Yeah, Miss Trimmer. If she liked you, she liked you. She didn't, she didn't. My brother.
Did she like you?
Well, I guess she did. I never had any problems with her. She's always nice to me. My brother said when I was there, soon after Daddy died, I think, and I got the mumps. And he said he remembered her walking into Latin class, and she said, even when she was really being nice, she was stern. And she said, John Layton, I just sent your sister home. And he thought, oh, what has she done with the mumps? I was scared of that.
Were childhood diseases the same back then as they are now? I mean,
yeah,
I know you're vaccinated for mumps now, but I remember.
Yeah, I had them all, except I had mumps and measles and chicken pox. And my vaccination, Miss Kirkland was her name. She was the health nurse for Rockridge County. And over where, across from John Layton, where the Andersons, who mm-hmm. live in there, down where he has his law office, that was a clinic. And Miss Kirkland came out once every so often and checked people and did the vaccinations. And so I was vaccinated 3 times.
How come?
Because they never would take. Yeah, I never would. I vaccinated 3 times, and Miss Kirkland said, there's no use to vaccinate her anymore because it's not the case.
And that was smallpox vaccination,
mm-hmm,
where you get the
mm-hmm,
little scare.
Mm-hmm. And John Layton and I love him to death, but when we were little, Mother said she thought she was going to have to kill us both because we fought all the time.
Oh, did you really?
Mm-hmm. But see, he was like almost 6 years older than I was, 5 years older, 5 or 6. Well, he's 84 now, and I'm 78. And he had been the only one, you see, for a long time. And then here came this little girl that was getting hard. And so we fought all the time. And now I was up there Sunday night, and we love each other dearly. But we fought our way through, you know, up through teenage. Not really teenage, but almost a teenage. And, so I used to tease him in the vaccination room because I told him it's because you were treating me so bad. That's why I'm not vaccination. He said, no, it's because you're so bad. That's why it didn't take.
Well, did he fish with you when your dad took you fishing?
He never did like to because you'd have to sit and wait. You know, we went up there to where we fished was, you go up there to Rockbridge, like you're going to go to turn left and go to Lexington and turn right and go to Rockbridge Baths. You go down to Rockbridge Baths and then go across that bridge and come back, and we fish down on that river bank down there. But he didn't want, Mother would pack our lunch and we'd go, but Darlene didn't want, he wanted to catch me one as soon as she got there. And so he, and you know, we fished, Lou and when we camped, Lou and I fished all the time. We loved, you know, still fished
mm-hmm.
in our older days. But then when I went to Mary Baldwin, I had to have the vaccination, and I mean it took then, Dr. Joe Williams gave it to me, and I mean it had a thing out there like a baseball, and it ached and hurt. They said it was because it had not taken, you know, I had to put a cup on it.
Oh, gosh.
I mean a plastic cup, you know, but No, it's just a lot of good things in Brownsburg. A lot of good things. We used to play over there on the bank, and Daddy had a store. People would come in on Saturday night, and the kids would come. We'd play red light and all, tag and hide and seek, and roll down that bank over there in front of the store. It was just a lot of fun. Then there was talking about the black people, there was a lady there, and she lived out on your road too, Aunt Mariah Fisher. She was a midwife. Aunt Mariah, she wore a white dress all the time and a little white cap that had a ruffle around it. And she delivered babies. And one thing that I got teased about was there was a doctor there. His name is Dr. Bailey. And Daddy and Dr. Bailey used to fish a lot. And the people who lived in across from John Layton, Miss Morris was a preacher. Have you heard about her?
Right.
Miss Morris? Okay, she was preaching. She took this family in, and they didn't have any children when they moved there, but then they had three real close together. So I didn't know anything about, you know, babies. You didn't talk about that then. But I just knew that I wanted a sister, and I knew they kept getting babies, and I didn't have one. So one morning I was lying in the bed with Mother and Daddy, and I said, and the people across the street had had a baby the night before. And I said, I don't see why they can have them, and we can't get one. And I said, why do they always get one? So, Daddy said, well, why don't you just go down and ask Dr. Bailey to bring you one? Well, like Mother said, he should have known better than to say that. And I didn't say anything. But boy, I couldn't wait to get my clothes on. So as soon as I got dressed and my breakfast, I just padded right down there to the doctor's house and knocked on the door. And Miss Bailey came to the door. And I said, could I speak to Dr. Bailey? And she said, well, I tell you, she said, it hasn't gotten up yet. She said, he was up most of the night because he had a baby to deliver. And I said, well, that's what I want to talk to him about. And she said, what did you want to talk to him about? And I said, well, I just wanted to ask him. My daddy said that if I came down here and asked him, that maybe he'd bring us the next one. So would you just ask him the next one, will he bring it to us? I went home, I was so excited. I couldn't wait to get home to tell him that I'd gone down there and asked for him. Mother said, Dad, don't you ever do anything like that. You know she's going to do it.
Oh, that's funny.
I never did get the baby.
So would the doctor and the midwife work together?
No.
And so it was either one or the other. You'd have the doctor
Aunt Mariah,
and the doctor.
Aunt Mariah just kind of, you know, assisted when people were. No, I don't think any doctor. Then there was another up there beyond this, between garage, Carwell's garage, going up that alley past there was a little log, no, in the log, but just a little one room thing, and there was a black lady lived there, and her name was Aunt Susan Porter.
Yes.
She cooked outside.
Lynn told me about her.
Tell me
what you remember about Aunt Susan.
She cooked outside, even in the cold winter. She'd be wrapped up right there cooking outside, and some of the kids were kind of afraid of her. Of course, I don't think we were afraid of her. Of course, Ms. Wiseman then used to tell us that we weren't afraid of anything. Jude was, but we weren't. That's why Jude didn't want to be with us, see. She didn't want to get in. She missed a lot of fun, though. But And we used to keep in the door, and she just was all piled up in there. It's just like one room, I think, or maybe I just remember one room. But the kids at school, I do remember the boys, some of the bad boys, because she was still living when I started school, and they used to go down there to her place at recess. Ms. Trimmer had a timekeeper. I'm talking about the little grade boys, you know, like fifth grade boys. They'd go down there, and they come, and she didn't like that. Aunt Susan didn't like that. She'd get really mad when they'd go down there. And I guess she thought they were teasing her or aggravating her or something. I never did go up there by myself. I think Lou and I went up there several times, but I don't think I was in it by myself. I don't think she ever bothered anybody, but she just lived there alone. And I do remember her standing out there at that fire with that fire going with the kettle hanging down in the fire cooking.
Lou said she remembered that somebody came from Petersburg, I think, and just took her away. And she never knew what happened.
I think that's right. I'm not sure, but I don't know whether, you know, there was, in Petersburg, there was a black mental institution. And so I always wondered if maybe that's where she went. Mm-hmm. Nobody ever knew. What I should have asked Dan Franklin. Dan Franklin worked for my stepfather. He made nut.
Oh, he did?
And Dan. Mm-hmm. And before Dan died, I used to take you over there and fix little dinners for him, little TV dinners, and we'd have things left. And after Dan worked on helping build our house in Stanton. And I bet Dan would have known all about that.
Now, some of Dan's sisters are still living.
Yeah, I talked to him. I went to Dan's funeral. And now that's been, of course, 2 years maybe now. But Eleanor is still living.
What's her last name?
I
think they live in Northern Virginia or Washington.
They do, Washington. And Eleanor, I think it's Eleanor's, I don't know whether it's Eleanor or Virginia's boy is the one that's so good to Dan.
I would love to talk to both of them, Eleanor and Virginia.
Oh, I can see them now walking up there on Sunday afternoon to church and all dressed up.
Yeah. Where did the Franklins live?
The Franklins lived, I think for a while, I'm not sure whether they lived there all the time, but I think for a while they lived there where John Fisher lived, in that house. I think that's where they lived for a while.
And then they would walk from there to
church.
To church.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the side of where the green house is, the side of us, you know, the house that I guess it's for sale again now, Mr. Tom Boss is up. There was, Press Carter lived there. That was Dora, Dan's wife Dora. That was her. Just Isabel. You know Isabel? Miss over on the hill.
Sykes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Isabel was married to Press, his son first, Hunter, and he died young, and then Isabel remarried. But Press and his wife Hallie had raised their two grandchildren, Manuel and Hallie Mae. And Hallie Mae was, I think she's about my age. She died a couple of years ago. And I think Manuel died too. They moved in Stanton. And they died, both and both of them. But they played out there stuff on the bank too. Having a name and Manuel.
Do you know Frank Schultz?
Mm-hmm. Frank David?
Yes.
Yeah.
Where did he live?
Frank David lived around, we called around the hill. Between the stores, we call it. You go around there and go up by, who lives in that gray house now? John Swisher in that house where Miss Carrie Peters used to live?
I think
the first road to the left.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Dry Hollow Road.
Uh-huh. Okay. The Schultz, Bert, and
her husband and all those children, they lived on that road. Bert worked for the Bosses. She cooked, worked for Mr. and Mrs. Jim Bosley.
And did you notice the Stewarts lived around there too?
Uh-huh. Roosh and, I'm not sure she, I don't know.
Well, there's Leroy who lives in Brownsburg now, uh-huh. and then Sammy, and I think Pauline lives in uh-huh. Brownsburg. Did uh-huh. you know that?
I didn't know Pauline, no. Uh-huh. I don't, that's a, I didn't know, I know who Sammy is, but I didn't know them.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew Roosh. Roosh had one son named, seemed like he was in the Navy, and he was a really huge, huge boy. And I remember he died, and they sent his body back, and it seemed to me like he had some communicable disease, because when the body got here, the casket had been sealed with glass.
Oh.
I remember Daddy bringing the seal, but he came in on the train.
Mm.
He had to go to the train.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm. Where did the train come from?
No, he went to Stanton and got it. But the train did come to Fairfield.
Mm-hmm. Did he have a hearse?
Daddy?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. He usually got a new hearse every couple of years.
Mm-hmm. And you're probably too young, really, to have any memory of the fact that it was the Depression.
Yeah, the only thing, because I was born in 29, and mm-hmm. of course that was, the only thing I do remember is, I do remember Daddy talking about it, and then later, after Daddy died and after Mother died, John Layton, we were talking, and people used to pay Daddy with potatoes and things, you know, and that's how we got the piano. I think she was a black lady, and she lived somewhere down below Newport. And Daddy buried somebody in her family. I'm not sure who it was. But she told him when he came that she didn't have any money. But she said, I do have this piano. Because that was about the time I was wanting to take the piano with. And it was a player piano.
Player
piano.
Mm-hmm.
And so he got that piano. And I do remember that. And I guess really looking back, then I was too little to know what it was all about. But I guess we were very fortunate, because I don't ever remember of wanting for anything or doing without anything. I know I didn't do without food, because mm-hmm. I was fat as a butterball.